Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills. 412-653-BEER. See all of our weekly specials at duffysbeer.com. Bud, Bud Light, and Coors Light 30-pack cans, only $18.99. Plus Miller Lite and Yingling 24-pack cans for only $14.99. Winter and Christmas beers are arriving daily. Give the gift of good cheer this Christmas with a gift card to Duffy's, your South Hills headquarters for beer, pop, snacks, vapes, home brewing supplies, and all your party and tailgating needs for this week's game. Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills, online at duffysbeer.com.
Duffy's Beer presents the morning show on Trib Live Radio featuring Ken Laird, Guy Junker, and Tim Benz. 294 Curry Hollow Road, 412-653-BEER. See all of our weekly specials at duffysbeer.com.
The Trib Live Radio Triple Threat.
He wants three. You know that's a trip. Trip. Triple.
And Ken Laird, Guy Junker, and now Tim Benz right here on Trib Live Radio.
Brought to you by Duffy's Beer, Trib Live Radio Morning Show. Quite a few check marks, guys, off the Pens fans' wish list last night. Quality game, quality opponent.
Navy Band played the national anthem.
Navy Band, that was on there, yep.
What happened there exactly? Jimerson came out saying, "Oh, Canada," and then left?
Yeah, and the Navy Band did the U.S. anthem.
That's a little bit weird.
Guys, well, the Navy Band probably doesn't know the Canadian anthem.
Did Jimerson pout like Chris Letang?
Kind of, yeah.
Off to the press box?
No, I don't know if he pouted as he left the ice or anything. It's just like he kind of gave it the quickest rendition possible of "Oh Canada."
Yeah,
and
it was fast. It was fast.
And there wasn't a lot of gusto to it. Usually he gives it gusto as if it's an appetizer for the national anthem.
I don't mop up for nobody.
I don't open.
I don't open.
I don't open for anybody.
Who am I, the fluff act? Seriously, though, Hornquist scores. Crosby, yeah. A great night. And you had a Doc Emmerich Pirates reference, too. Quite the night at Consol.
Oh, what did he drop in? I didn't hear.
He dropped the Bob Prince of Bob Princeisms after the game. We had him all the way.
Oh.
Said Bob would have been happy from the great beyond.
Any commentary on the Jim Benedict for a second-round pick?
No, he didn't weigh in on that. We will, though, coming up a little bit later in the hour. In case Guy missed that one yesterday, it was an interesting trade.
It's a very funny story to me. A very funny story for many reasons that we'll get into.
I just did the, on this date in history, Sanguian being traded to the A's from Chuck Tanner last week, or 2 weeks ago.
That's right.
There you have it. Now we have executives in the trade hopper. But we were just talking yesterday, guys, about Patrick Hornquist maybe being on the block based on the rumor from inside Pittsburgh sports. Line three was bolstered in some way last night, at least to the tune of Hornquist scoring, although I guess he was out there on a partial line with Crosby, right? Because Sid had the big tip pass to him.
That was a great pass. Between the legs at that angle with that much pace to cover three-quarters of the width of the ice, about right?
Hornquist had some excellent in at least two point-blank, all-alone, in-close opportunities and didn't score on either of them. No, he tied the game. I'm not going to – but, I mean, it's the kind of stuff – you're going to see more, or we did last year, him score more in those kind of situations than the goal he actually scored.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny about Leeway. In terms of the penalties they got into in the second period, Mike Milbury, of all people, was mocking the referees and saying, you know, can we have a little room for the men to be men in this game and play a little bit? Like Hornquist gets mauled in front of the net, and they call nothing. And you get these little taps from Sid going to the bench, and Letang with a, you know, I probably deserved that one, I guess, away from the play, the elbow. They were awful sensitive in the second period, and then, you know, Hornquist and others in front of the net, they let go in the third period.
It was interesting to listen to Ben Lovejoy afterwards, and he had some comments that I know we're going to play as the show goes along, but one thing he brought up.
It was even more interesting to listen to Sidney Crosby afterwards. Oh, that's right, he didn't talk.
No, there was no Sid yesterday. But Lovejoy was talking about their ability to maintain composure, which they almost lost, and he said it with a very edgy tone to his voice about how we have worked very hard on this and we almost let it happen where we lost our composure again. Like, it's almost like he was wagging his finger at himself and his teammates saying, this is something that we've emphasized over and over again. Don't get too pissy. Don't get too petulant. Don't become a bunch of babies. And it was teetering. And that
was he looking right at Letang as he said that?
No. Well, Letang's locker is right next to his, but I didn't see him
there
after either.
No, I didn't see him either.
Well, what did you think of the calls? I mean, like, Letang got crushed by Markov. Should that have been a penalty, first of all, before the Gallagher goal, which ties the game at two? He's in on a rush. He's behind the net. I know he's like he's going to the hard areas. But he got drilled in the numbers and goes hard into the wall. No call. And then he's obviously mad about it and elbows that guy away from the puck.
That was terrible, though. I mean, you can't retaliate that way.
But it wasn't that vicious. I mean, you see that all the time, right?
No, yeah, but not knocking a guy off his skates, Ken. You know what? That's why they've gotten in trouble in the past. That's why they have the reputation league-wide of being whiners. Because, all right, you didn't get your way. You play through it. You wait till the next opportunity. Or when you have a chance to open ice, clean hit the guy, you do. You don't take a cheap penalty to make up for one not being called against you.
But if you don't think it's going to be a penalty, then that's different. Like, I'm sure he felt he could get away with that. Mm. It was a little elbow, and the guy fell over like he was Vlade Divac, you know, back in his heyday.
Wow, I mean, a Canadian diving, that's something new, huh?
Yeah, and then the Sid penalty. I mean, come on. He gives the guy a little shove as he goes to the bench after the goal's allowed. I thought that was pretty weak. I'm with Milbury on this one. Anyway, was it a signature win? One of the tweeps had already weighed in with that line, so I'll throw it out as the cliche today.
I think
today.
Beating Montreal the way they're playing right now is a signature win, whether it's regardless of how it comes about. You add into it that you come from behind in the third period for the first time, and not only come from behind when you played like horseshit. I mean, this wasn't like they battled tough for two periods and came back. They disappeared in the second period. You score a goal in the first minute of the first period and the last minute of the first period, two things that usually crush a team. I mean, you know, first rush down ice, goal. And then, you know, they even it up, and then you get one in the last minute. And then you come out the way they did and played that second period was awful. So I think for lots of reasons, just beating Montreal in itself could be a signature win. It's only their third loss.
I'm going to disagree. I think it's impossible to call a signature win in the NHL this early. I think it was a good win, quality win, a way to get 2 points in difficult circumstances we've just outlined. But I don't think signature wins exist in the NHL before Thanksgiving.
Well, we could have said that about the Pirates, though, Tim, when Andrew McCutchen said, I'm tired of going 0 for freaking 4, and they had a terrible month. It was awful early, but it seemed to spark the team. Now, I don't know if this Mike Johnston riot act, I want to hear this audio, because if he actually went out of character and was the hammer and sparked this team to a third-period comeback, I'd say that's one you got to put down in the books with a bit of a star and an asterisk.
Let's see if they come from behind. Let's see if this is the only come from behind win they have all year. I think you can have a signature win before Thanksgiving. It may not turn out to be that way, but I think, you know, when you get asked, and Dupuis was asked sheepishly or answered sheepishly, you know, what you guys know the stats. I think it was Jonathan Bomboli who said it. Come on, because everybody was like, oh, you know, Hornquist took umbrage when someone said, it's your first come from, he said, we came from behind in Washington. Someone said, in the third period. And, you know, they know that they haven't come from behind to win a game in a year and a half. So maybe this somehow, that cloud hanging over them when they're walking out the runway for the third period down a goal or two, maybe some of that lifts now and it starts happening more regularly.
I'm skeptical to give it that kind of gravitas because of what happened last year, the way they just shat the bed at the end of the season after playing so well at the beginning of the year. I don't think the story of this team is ever told until late regular season in the playoffs, especially when there's always so much movement as to what the team is at the trade deadline with the Penguins.
Oh yeah, I'm not I'm not projecting that far forward, but I think it's the most impressive win they've had this year.
That'll give you yes, I would agree with that. It's their best win
against
of the
best team in the league.
Yes, best win of the season, sure, no doubt. Signature win. I don't know. I saved that for later in the year.
Well, Crosby had two assists. He had the winner in the shootout.
Boy, did Perron and Crosby make that goalie look like a goalie who's never been in a shootout before.
Yeah.
They made it look so easy. That kid has been really good this year for them while Carey Price has been out, correct? Wasn't he 6-0-1 or something like that?
Yeah.
I think his only loss was in a 3-on-3 overtime, correct? And then he goes in the shootout, and Perron and Sid, you know, they could have been half asleep and gotten those pucks by him. He was just dazed and entranced looking
at those
two.
Here's a question I have, and I tried to ask this Perron, and he used the platform to go on to a long diatribe about how he doesn't really like three-on-three play. But I asked him how much time now is spent in practice, because especially under Bosma, they spent a lot of time with shootouts in practice, mustache boy and all that stuff. Has that less? This is you know, you're a month and a half into the season. Well, 5 weeks into the season, and this is their first shootout. Do you still practice as much? And how much time is devoted to 3-on-3? I mean, in the course of a regular season in the past, you might have one practice every 2 months with any three-on-three play because it never came up in a game. I just wonder how much, you know, how practice time is when they actually have a full day of a regular practice is now divvied up in that. And instead of answering the question when I asked him, he went under this thing how he's not – it was actually interesting how he's not really into the three-on-three. He doesn't like it.
That was the ugliest three-on-three we've seen.
Yeah,
you said you've seen every three-on-three in the NHL going into
this
week.
That was pretty bad.
That was just poorly played. And
well, we had a couple chances. Like, Lovejoy bricked a pass on a two-on-one.
That but it became three-on-four pretty quickly, too, which changes the thing. In fact, Perron told me that the referee came over to both benches before the game and said, we are going to be watching closely for line changes on the three-on-three. And sure enough, Montreal got caught. So
that's a memo. That means a memo has come down from the league. Or an email or something like that. I thought this was an example of the extra ice working against the skaters. And, you know, I talked about that when we were arguing about the Olympics. And I think, you know, you showed me some of the blowout games, but I still think there are some games in there that were lower scoring than I expected with wider ice because the players almost use the width of the ice against themselves. They go so wide, they use it so much that it takes a long time for the passes to get across and the defensemen were allowing them to do that in the Olympics. With the extra ice, I thought you saw that in this case yesterday with just three guys on the ice per side. There were just drop passes being left for no one. And
yeah.
You know, they were so enticed by the extra room that they had that they were sloppy with it. And that was definitely the least visually stimulating of the three-on-three overtime situations that we have seen so far. They got to, like you said, three-on-four because of the bad line change that Montreal didn't even argue. Near as I could tell. Maybe I missed a shot of the bench, but just from up at the press box, I didn't see them debate it at all. And then Letang...
Therrien was even more stoic than usual. I looked at that their bench about seven times throughout the night, various things going right or wrong for them. He never changed the expression. I never saw him talk to anybody.
No, Letang
inside
had an empty
Vesuvius.
Net, right? Letang had that wide open... And then hit the post.
Yeah.
He had beaten the guy. So that would have made a different narrative before we got to the shootout. But, Fleury was obviously more polished in the shootout. I wonder how clean and crisp and confident Perron and Crosby would have been if that had been Carey Price in the net as opposed to the backup.
But I also, I'll give Fleury credit because he left a crap goal in again. It matters. He likes playing against Montreal. He's from up there. That's his team growing up watching. And those games weigh a little bit more. And the two fluffiest goals or two of the worst games he's had has been the two home games against Montreal. Mm-hmm. And he took Lovejoy's stick that he eyed. And I don't know if he got stitches, but he had to come up. And to
it
come
was
back,
bad.
He played.
He did,
his face was a mess, and he came back. And I didn't know this. His dad lost an eye to a stick.
Is that right?
Wow.
Yeah. So he was immediately worried, wondering, you know, when he first got hit, what the extent of the damage was. To come back from all that, and the second save he made in the shootout was a great save.
Yeah, two pad stack when he flopped to the ice. Ken, I don't know if you saw interviews of Fleury afterwards, but there's a little incision. It was just like two or three stitches, but his whole cheekbone was starting to turn black and blue.
Black and blue, yep.
And swell up. I don't know if he's going to be able to play. I mean, I hope Zatkoff plays on Friday. They give him an extra day, and maybe it starts to open back up again.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to, you know, I'm sure they had him penciled in one way or the other, but if they had Fleury in Friday, just move him to Saturday then.
Yeah, just have Zatkoff play against the Blue Jackets because you got to save Fleury for the Devils and Farnham.
Ken, we were there, so I didn't see the real good. Yeah, that's right. The real good view. To me, it's hard to imagine how a stick can get inside the mask like that and do that much damage.
Only Ben Lovejoy can pull that baby off.
He can thread the needle anywhere.
Yeah, he can. Well, and Pierre, of course, talked to Fleury after the game and did half of it in French, so we'll have that cut for you later in the program because he wanted to show off his French ability. But back to Perron for a second.
What about a Swedish with Mata?
Yeah, who also got gashed. I don't know if he was in the locker room. He looked nasty, right? He got cut on the chin.
I didn't see Mata
all the way down
afterwards.
Pretty slim pickings. I'm standing in line with a cameraman I don't usually work Penguins with. He says, "Who are we going after in here?" I said, "Whoever's talking. We won't have much of a choice."
And well, let's hear this Lovejoy cut, because I want to hear this, riot act.
I talked to him. This is Lovejoy after the game talking about the riot act that was read to them by Mike Johnston after that bad second period.
We can't let that happen, but I was proud of the guys. We came in during the second intermission. Coach Johnston read us a bit of the riot act, and we came out and responded with a big comeback victory.
What did he say? As much as you can about that riot act, you want to give us the Cliff Notes version?
He's a very cerebral man. He comes in. I'm sure it was very calculated, and you could tell he was disappointed in the way the second period went, and I really feel like we responded from that first shift of the third period, and were able to claw our way back in.
We picked up that cut midway through, Ken, but that whole thing at the very beginning of we can't let that happen, that was the end of what I was talking about before when we said they were starting to lose their composure.
I would like to see Mike Johnston. You know, guys of his intellect and disposition are usually funny when they get really mad.
Well, that's why I asked him exactly that.
Where people like laughing at him behind the scenes.
Yeah, have that ready to go, Josh, there, that Johnston clip, because I said to him, that's exactly what I said. I said, Mike, what is a Mike Johnston riot act?
That was a poopy period.
Well, I didn't like the way we were playing. I think anybody watching that second period, when you trade chances with a very good team like that, you just can't play that way. You can't cross the line, drop the puck, make back passes, blind passes. And we were having such good success in the first period by making direct plays and bringing it to the net, and we just couldn't play that way. If we wanted to come back in that game, we had to play the right way in the third period, and we need to regroup early. A lot of times you go in and talk to them later in the period, but I just want to send the message, let them sit on it, let them talk about it themselves, and then it's in their hands. And they responded, I thought, in the third period.
The way Lovejoy described it, I got the impression it was surprisingly effective. But, Guy, I would have had the same instinct that you had when it comes to what a Mike Johnston riot act comes off as.
Well, I don't know what you want, Tim, for a signature win. You've got Mike Johnston giving a bit of a riot act. I'll take it. You know, come on. Signature win,
you
baby.
You can't
this
do that
it.
All the time.
You're lollygaggers!
You know, work a guy like him that doesn't do that often, it'll have its effect. If it's a guy that screams and yells after every period, it doesn't work anymore. So he picked a good time to do it, I think.
By the way, Sidney Crosby was the biggest violator of what he was talking about there. Blind drop pass in the offensive zone, which led to a rush the other way in that second period.
Maybe the captain got singled out, and that's why he wasn't talking last night.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, because, I mean, largely he had a good game. Maybe he didn't want to hear people saying, what about your first comeback in 37? As Hornquist obviously didn't want to answer that after the game. Back to Perron real quick. He started the overtime with Sid. They, like, trust this guy now, don't they? I mean, I hate to say it, but he's playing well. That shootout goal was really good, really impressive. Pierre was calling him a stick-handling phenom. I guess he is. Maybe we just don't see him enough in the offensive zone, or hadn't, to really appreciate it. He's clearly talented, but if they get him going all year.
I did find that interesting, too, Ken, that was the decision to go with those two and Letang.
Yes, Sid Perron and Letang.
Right, you knew that they were going to go with Gino and Kessel. That's no surprise. But who's going to go with Sid now that Dupuis is healthy? My instinct would have said it would have been Dupuis, and in the past it had been Kunitz, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that they went with Perron there was interesting to me as well. And then they put, what was it? Was it Bonino and Kunitz that went out there for a brief? Or was it Bonino and Hornquist?
They put Gino out there with...
Bonino got out there, I know that, before the penalty. Maybe they never got another person out there before the penalty happened. That might have been it. But I kind of thought that Hornquist got out there in overtime with Bonino for at least a short period.
He did. He blocked a shot. Gino and Kessel were the next two, and I forget who
Bonino
was.
So Bonino and Hornquist was the third forward pair.
I'll tell us what you think of the game last night. Benz doesn't want to give him the signature win. Come on, give it to him. SportsTalk@TribWeb.com.
Titanic tilt is what ESPN is calling it on the website today.
I think you got to wait for more of the season to play out before you start labeling signature wins. I mean, look at how bad things went towards the end of the season last year.
Yeah, if they lose five of their next seven, obviously it wasn't.
I mean, you want to go back and look at where their signature win was in November of December or December of last year when they were kicking the shit out of people?
Yeah, but at the end of the year last year, they were playing with five defensemen. I mean,
who's to say something like that can't happen this year?
Well, I've never seen that in my 36 years on the planet, so I'm assuming it's not going to happen again this year. I'm going to try to evaluate
team. You're right. You have not seen five defensemen in your 36 years on the planet, but you did see Mark Letestu centering the top line.
I've seen a lot of strange things on the top line, yeah.
You've seen a lot of crazy shit go on with this team.
Including Bo Bennett last night. Like, if you just dropped on the earth and said, Crosby's playing with Bennett tonight?
You saw them pull some random Russian goalie out of the out of Siberia. Remember that time in Vancouver where
they misspelled his name.
And they
yeah, they misspelled his name on the uniform.
You've seen more crazy shit with this team. It doesn't have to be five defensemen for it to be unique with this hockey team.
Okay, but you know,
you saw Sean Rodriguez play first base in a wild card game. Crazy shit happens.
They've won 10 of 12, and a lot of good shit happened last night. So I just want to give them their due at this point.
Give them their due for it being the best win of the year. I'm totally with you on that. The best win of the year. I just don't like the hyperbole of signature win. I don't think you figure out what a signature win is until after the season is over.
You don't like me. We'll go back to the mild tremor then. You guys don't like my hyperbole. That's fine. We'll go a little more Mike Johnston.
Okay, can I give you an example of what I'm
talking
about?
I'm going to read you a bit of the Riot Act next segment. How about
that?
All
right, cool. But I want to give you an example of what you're talking about. When Jerome Bettis ran over Brian Urlacher en route to the Super Bowl, were we calling that a signature moment of the season at the time? Or was it, oh, thank God they won one to steady the ship?
That's a fair point.
As time has gone by, what was the signature moment of the 2005? Oh, the bus rambled over Brian Urlacher at the goal line. You know, that was the signature moment. You have to write that part of the script afterwards once you know what the season is.
All right, but we're a prediction-type show. You know, we use the knowledge we have at the moment. This is the one win you could flag of these last 10 of 12 that you would say, this actually looks like some pretty important stuff happened here.
At the moment, this is their best win of the year. You know, signature win to me implies that you're tagging something greater on the victory, on the accomplishment. And I don't think you can make that judgment until we see where the season goes.
All right. By the way, I got to throw this in. I put this in quotes for you guys. Mike Milbury after the game. Ready? This is his praise of the Penguins. They putz along. They find a way. That's okay.
What a douche nozzle.
Because, they putz along and find a way. That's his assessment.
Putz along and find a way. Yeah, but for how many years in the past now?
If the Flyers would have won that game the exact same way, he would have been dancing naked, rubbing cocoa oil all over
himself. Maybe not the Flyers, but the Bruins for damn sure. The Bruins for damn sure. You know, that if they had won a game like that in recent seasons, let me rephrase. If it had been 6-3 or 7-4 or something like that, oh, they only play offense. He would have given it that. Oh, you know, they don't play tough hockey. They could win games like that. He'd find a way to modify the success of any Penguin victory, no matter how hard. God damn it, this is a signature win, Ken. This and Mike Milbury is peeing all over it.
I agree. Benz and Milbury, Jagoffs for next week, based on their lack of enthusiasm and hyperbole for this win. I want to talk about the Steelers game this weekend. We got tomorrow to really break it down. And Daryl Ryder from 92.3, The Fan in Cleveland, will join us at 11.
Talking
about Brownies.
Is that allowed? Can we have a brand wire on like that? Or are we going to get in trouble?
Oh, he is part of the CBS family, isn't he?
That's cool. I like that.
Daryl's a friend of the program.
Oh, is he?
He's a media friend of TRL. TLR. MFOTLR.
The media friends of Mike Mitchell. That was a big hit yesterday.
That was good. This weekend, we got Landry and maybe Johnny. We'll find out from Daryl when he joins us at 11. My question to you guys is, we're listening to the excellent Steelers Roundtable coming in here this morning, 9 to 10 every Thursday morning.
The Traffic Report Show.
Don't give him a big head.
They were discussing Landry Jones. Chris Adamski was saying, can you believe that, like, it's not even a debate as to whether Mike Vick was even going to start this game or not. It was Landry 100%.
Mm-hmm.
This weekend, let's say Landry becomes Landry again, and he's got a couple bad series. Are they going to stick with him? What's the leash here on the QBs in this game?
I don't think it should be very – it shouldn't be – I'm trying to think back to that Kansas City game. It shouldn't be very long. If he is just an abortion in the first half and they're teetering on losing
– they fall two touchdowns of Tom behind, he's out.
Yeah, go ahead and –
Well, no, I shouldn't say that. If they're two touchdowns behind and it's 28-14, it might not be his fault. If it's 14-0 and they're not moving the ball, I'm getting them out of there.
Here's the
like
problem,
a couple
though.
Picks, like one quarter and a half, something like that, you give him?
The notion of Michael Vick having to throw your way back into a game kind of scares me.
Oh, yeah.
You know that.
And it feels like they've given up on him. He's been on the injury report, and he's just – it's almost like – well, even Cabali said this. It feels like Ike Taylor last year, when he got hurt, they didn't want to say he lost his job, so they kept him on the injury report, you know? And Vick's been – you know, hey, thank God, his hamstring injury. Otherwise, we never would have seen Landry Jones. So they kind of lucked into this in the first place. Now they just haven't brought Vic off the injury report.
Well, he has to be the backup this week, right?
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah. Here's what my hope would be.
I didn't go to Steelers yesterday, Tim. Did he practice yesterday regular, Vic?
I didn't get there early enough to see much of him. I'm trying to remember if I saw him run any scout. I think I saw him run some scout, maybe.
Well, I was trying to put some notes, early notes together for pick and parry. I don't know where to go in this game. You don't know who's playing quarterback for Cleveland. You don't really know what's going on with running back with the Steelers. This game's a mess to pick right now.
Here's what I would hope, and this is maybe me thinking with my heart more than my head, but my hope would be similar to how Landry Jones has come into games and been better, like, for instance, when he filled in for Michael Vick after Vick got hurt against the
Arizona
Cardinals.
Yep.
Maybe Vick comes in, the Browns are completely unprepared for a quarterback of that ilk, and if his hamstring is healthy, he can run around, break some open grass, and eat up 20 yards on a chunk play that way as opposed to throwing them back into the game if they're struggling.
Totally agree. I love that change of quarterback. When you're down to your backups, you might as well just do whatever you can to win the game, and it does seem to work every time when you bring somebody with a different style into the game.
Yeah, well, yeah, if it's the same kind of quarterback, and I think a lot's to be said when Vic first replaced Ben, and then when Jones came in, Jones admitted yesterday that he is more comfortable coming in relief than he is starting. Now, hopefully he gets that out of his system by Saturday. I think this is the kind of game, I mean, I just think Cleveland's at the point of the season. If you get up on them 10-0, they're going to fold the tents. And that's, I think the early part of the game is very important, and that's why I think it's a good question, Ken. How much patience do you have? Now, I may be underestimating Cleveland. Maybe they got more fight left in their belly than I think, but I just have a feeling they're about ready to say to hell with this.
So if the Pirates can employ Golden State Warrior substitution patterns, can the Steelers employ Pittsburgh Pirate bullpen management? And just make sure you don't use Landry 3 games in a row out of the bullpen because his arm is going to get tired. So this is a Michael Vick game, kind of like on occasion we've had a Tony Watson game.
Or a Tyler Murphy game.
Well,
or D'Angelo and the Wildcat. I don't know. If D'Angelo's healthy, maybe he's running Wildcat this week. But you know, like in the Kansas City game, they were down 9-3 at the half. They kept him in, but I don't think they had a backup available that week, right? Vick was out totally, so it was just, I think it was just Landry, and they had no choice.
Yeah.
This week they have some options. So if they get behind 9-3 or 16-3 as they did in that game, you wonder how much they truly do believe in Landry, because we have seen him for years, and you can't get out of your brain the horrible throws that you've seen him make in practice. They could come back in this game, and it's just the Landry Jones we all remember, including these coaches who had no faith in him up until Vic's hamstring injury in that Arizona game.
It hasn't happened here in a while, but you know it could be the equivalent of some of the losses we've seen in Cleveland against those guys. Yes, this could be the 8-turnover game reenacted. Absolutely.
I think he's come a ways, and I think we've seen it. I think they've seen it, and the reason they're more confident in him is, you know, he played a lot in the preseason. He's had some actual game experience for the first time in his life, and he's been fairly good. His quarterback rating is almost at 100. That's not bad. So I think all of that put together in his own mind and in their minds I think the rest of that locker room is much more comfortable with him now than they were even in July.
That'll be something to watch. I'd love your take on that. How long you would stay with Landry? SportsTalk@TribWeb.com.
I want to see his hair messed up. That dude's hair is never messed up. Who wears a football helmet, runs around in practice or in a game, takes it off, and it's still perfectly parted and clean? He looks like a Ken doll.
That dorky part is very in. See, Fleury had the same thing going on last night, even after playing 3 periods of hockey. That dorky part.
No, I got rid of my part because our consultant said it was out of style. You got to comb your hair so you don't have a part.
Yeah, but you weren't a hipster back then. This is kind of a hipster thing.
Okay.
A little facial hair and like the overpronounced part is very in.
Okay. I'm surprised our TV guy is the one that's complaining about hair being too perfect. I thought you would be praising the guy for that.
Ken, what do you think about never mind.
Sleek? I got the Matt Hasselbeck look going.
Yes, you do. That is a very good analogy. You do look like
you
the lost Hasselbeck.
You could carve a part into your head. That would be cool.
Carve a line in there?
Carve a line in there.
Mark Cobali, also on the Roundtable Show, was talking about the O-line. Who's laughing now, O-line? The last time Landry started, Villanueva made his first start along with him.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of a bad matchup, and you know, Tom Bahali got the strip sack on him late in the game, and he was a part of that. Villanueva's been a little more experienced. Now, Cabali's going to the point of saying he thinks he's improved so much, or at least enough, that Kelvin Beachum is not going to play again for the Steelers. He thinks he's done. and they're just going to go cheap, and they've seen enough good from Villanueva that he's their guy.
Well, even the Kansas City game, Ken, he was so hard on himself. The coaches said, other than, and they were big plays, other than the two times that Hall-E beat him badly, he didn't play that poorly.
I guess that's probably true. What have you guys thought of Big Al here on Veterans Day week?
I said on Monday, I was watching him with the binoculars Sunday, probably at the most 10 plays, probably 7 or 8 plays, where I just thought, I'm going to watch him on this play. And they were all sort of insignificant. He wasn't getting beat. He was doing his job. He was all right.
I think the decision to keep or lose Kelvin Beachum should be utterly irrespective of Alejandro Villanueva. It's because you think that his knee is not healthy enough and he is not good enough to keep. You think that you can get a better tackle on the open market. I don't think you make the decision on Benjamin based on Alejandro Villanueva.
Well, I think more money is what Mark is saying. Like, and Mark wrote about Marcus Gilbert today in his piece at TribLive.com and pointed out that, you know, we didn't think when he signed that deal it was going to be a great one, 5 years, $30 million. But he's been good. He has not allowed a sack this year. Well, you guys can judge for yourself whether he's been good, but technically
no,
he's not allowed a sack this year.
He's been good. I think that his play against Cincinnati was a little too glossed over just because he technically didn't allow a sack. And I still maintain he's the biggest reason why Roethlisberger got hurt on that St. Louis play, because there was a collapse from the right side, and that's where he stepped up into the pocket. Quinn just pushed him right back towards Ben. But for the most part, I think he's been very good. You could argue that he's been their most steady offensive lineman. You know, DeCastro always seems to get that tag, but I think Gilbert's been very good on the right side. On the left side of the line, though, again, I don't think that this has much to do with Villanueva.
Well, but they're paying. But the point is, they're paying Gilbert $6 million a year. Mm-hmm. They're paying the center $8.5-9 million a year.
Too often they're, be hurt.
DeCastro making a ton.
Yeah,
he's going to be making a ton when he signs his new deal. Can they afford to pay the left side of their line much of anything?
Oh, boy, that's
maybe
not
you
got to
go
cheap. On though, right?
You wouldn't think.
Yeah, the with Roethlisberger aging, and look, the you can have a 32-year-old running back come in and rush for 127 yards against the Patriots, 170 yards last week. I'm not taking anything away from Le'Veon Bell, but you got to credit what's going on up front for him to be able to do that too.
I guess they have gone cheap though, haven't they, at the left tackle position with Beachum?
With Beachum, yeah, that's and they've gotten away with it.
We're not going to start the talk though of moving Gilbert over to left, are we?
We've seen that before, and it hasn't been good.
I don't want to see, don't mess. It's taken this long between him and Mike Adams. It's taken this long to get 2 years of fairly decent productivity, and it's been all with Gilbert on the right side. So I'd leave it alone.
Tunch, I asked Tunch Okun one time. I said, "What is easier to do, move from like guard to tackle, or even center to tackle, or center to guard, or move sides?" He said, "By far, switching positions is easier. Switching sides, it's like learning to dance the opposite way." If you're the, you know, whether you're leading or following, and the footwork and everything is different.
Well, and you know, the Mike Adams situation, he's, according to the guys, going to be put on IR and done for the year by the end of the week. So there goes that possibility of a backup, former second round pick of yours. And also interesting, the two of the guys gave Cody Wallace their arrow up for the week. They think he's been playing a lot better. I guess he has too.
I thought he has rebounded the last couple weeks.
So that's good news. So they're getting it done with sort of a patchwork line right now. But we're going to see now with Ben out of the game if that stuff becomes more evident.
I don't think their games have been won or lost with the offensive line. I think they're doing a good enough job to keep them in the hunt for what they want to do.
Yeah, maybe the Chiefs game, if the Hall-E plays or two that you look at and say the O-line cost them. The Bengals game. I was hard on the Bengals on the line during the Bengals game.
I mean, that second, what were they down in the Chiefs game? They were down 2 scores. I mean, everybody makes a big deal about that last strip sack fumble. I mean, they weren't going to get 2 scores in the last couple minutes anyway.
Well, it was 16-10 actually at the time.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay, I thought it was 2 scores. All right.
Because Landry led them down the field and they scored to make it 16-10. Actually, it was 16-13.
Maybe it's time to start looking left tackle or offensive tackle high in the draft again.
I think they have. It just never works out.
That's
for
what
them.
I'm saying. You know,
they never pick high enough.
Mike Adams, you swung and missed. All right, it's over. That's never going to pan out. So you missed on that one. Gilbert ended up being a right tackle. Fine. You wanted one of those two guys to be on the right side anyway. What I'm suggesting is that you end up drafting a left tackle project high, and you can get away for a little while with Villanueva as your left tackle, and if that doesn't work out by week 4 or 5, maybe the rookie is ready to go.
I don't know, Tim. They need to draft another pass rusher this year, don't they?
Well, they need to draft a cornerback, and I mean, they keep drafting all these outside linebackers, and yes, like you're suggesting, they keep going there and going there and going there, and then you have 4 of them playing at the same time, and they combine for 3 tackles.
Well, here's another clip we got to get in. Your chat with Arthur Motes. He's saying all is well as the house burns behind him.
Yes.
Here's what Motes said to Tim in regards to the lack of production from their first-round pick groupage. Although Motes is not one of them, he, of course, is part of that 4-man rotation.
Well, yeah, I mean, at the same time, you know, it's definitely going to be on us to be more productive and things like that, but sometimes the flow of the game is not really opportunities like that. So, I mean, it's one of those things that you can't buy too much into the stats, but at the same time, we understand what we have to do. If it's inside runs or if it's passes and stuff like that, you're not going to have that many opportunities. Whereas if you're at, you know, inside position, the ball's coming right to you, so you got more opportunities.
Yeah, and I asked every outside linebacker that I could find. I couldn't get to Harrison, so I asked the other 3, and they all kind of said the same thing. Well, Oakland ran inside a lot. Well, Derek Carr got rid of the ball quickly. And that excuse got pretty tiresome to me a couple years ago when it came to sacks. But 70 snaps, 4 men, 3 combined tackles? Come on. You got to get some more productivity than that.
Even Tomlin ripped him in his press conference. He never rips anybody in the press conference.
He did until I specifically brought up this position group. When he went into his preamble before he even took any questions.
It was general criticism.
Yeah, it was general criticism. When I said offensive linebackers specifically as a follow-up to try to pin the blame on those guys, well, then he modified it and, you know, tried to dance his way out of it. But I thought the initial answer before I tried to put a position tag on it was far more revealing.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm just looking to the playoffs now. If you're going to get in, and we're assuming they are, it's not a done deal by any means, but it looks like a wild card. You got to go on the road and beat a good quarterback, I think. Well half the quarterbacks
not.
Are injured.
Maybe not.
Yeah, we didn't even bring that up yesterday.
Andrew Luck?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's big.
Week 4, because there have been reports of 2-6 and then reports of 4-6, the week 4 of that 2 or 4-6 would be the Steelers for them.
Well, and Pro Football Doc, Chow, a.k.a. Chow, says
Lord.
6 weeks. 6 weeks would be generous, he thinks, for this kind of an injury. And actually, I think Jay Glazer said the same thing. He says,
that's why this stuff, I mean, when we sit here every week and look ahead and figure this game, that game, they'll split these two to win. It's so impossible to you know, how much that game changed now, because they've actually started to play a little better. Beginning of the year, that was looking like in that grouping of games, it might be the easiest one.
But because of that, the 5th seed as opposed to the 6th is huge, right? You get to play
yes.
the winner of that division
sure.
as opposed to Peyton Manning or, you know, Andy Dalton in Cincinnati.
That does
there's your
up.
Win,
yes.
Tim.
Your
first playoff win since 2010.
I'm 100% on board on this topic with you. It makes the race for the wild cards all the more interesting because 5 versus 6 as opposed to 6 and being out. I think all 3 are interesting. It's not just try to get into the 6. It's also just as interesting to try to catch the 5 because it's a winnable game to go on the road and play Indianapolis with an ailing or out Andrew Luck as opposed to then what going out to Invesco. Now, I know Peyton's hurt too and his foot is bothering him and his arm is a noodle and it's falling apart, but you still got to face that defense. That's a far less winnable game.
Yeah, and I think the Patriots aside, I don't think Denver or Cincinnati wants a healthy Steelers offense coming into their building to play a playoff game in January.
The Peyton Manning foot injury, that's also pretty interesting. It sounded like the coach was blaming the turf in Indy or something as causing more of a problem on his foot, but he's had it for a few weeks, so he like re-aggravated it.
Oh, great. So what we're saying is that Pittsburgh will go to Indy, win, Ben's ailing foot will be aggravated by the turf, and then Landry Jones will play against the Patriots.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, Ben's got a bad foot.
Because I can't see Belichick coming up with anything to fool Landry Jones.
No, that's not going to happen. No, but back to the pass rushers. That's the one team you look at, and you say, okay, maybe they didn't have many opportunities to get a Derek Carr, but you think you're going to have any for Brady? You better get some pass rush somehow if you're going to beat Tom Brady and the Patriots in the postseason.
Yeah, you know
that
what else might help
must.
Is spelling Stephon Tuitt and Cam Hayward on occasion. Those two guys played all 70 snaps.
Especially, oh, now you like the Golden State Warrior plan.
Especially with Tua coming off an injury, though. That just doesn't make sense.
I think there's a little bit of a difference, don't you, Ken?
Well, we've all seen Cam Thomas. I think that's the real answer.
Yeah. Cam Thomas ain't no Andre Iguodala.
I think in general, maybe not this past week, their pass rush has been a lot better than last year, I think. I don't just measure it in terms of sacks. I mean, you look at a quarterback's percentage of completions when they're under duress as opposed to standing there, and I think it's been a big part of their success. I think I'd have to look at pressures statistically and see if they're up over last year, but in my mind, they are.
Maybe that was part of this game that we're not given credit for. Tua was first game back off injury. That affected the pass rush. Like, they had 22 sacks coming into the game. If Tua's at the top of his game, maybe they get to Carr a few more times. And maybe that's been the key for them when they have gotten home the first part of the year. But if he's healthy, Tim, I want to see him play like Jarvis Jones. I mean, what's the difference between that and the young linebackers? Why not Tua all the time?
Well, Ken, there's a difference between all the time and all the time. I mean, a majority of the snaps, absolutely. 70 for 70 at the defensive end position?
I'm with you this week. That was a lot. And maybe it did bite.
You expend a lot of energy on every snap, or at least you should. I mean, Wolfley was making a point of this last night on the show, is that he just doesn't see intensity along the offensive line like he used to. Like, there's a lot of patty cake and willingness to be blocked on both sides from the defensive players and the offensive linemen. The offensive linemen seem to give a little bit more, and the defensive players seem to stop their motor a little bit more quickly.
Back in my day, the guys never quit
their
motor.
Well, he prefaced it that way, too. He's like, I don't want to sound like, you know, the grumpy old man back in my day. I think it's exactly what he said. But, you know, I agree with him.
We're brought to you by Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills. 412-653-BEER and all of our weekly specials at duffysbeer.com. And not only your snacks, pop, beer headquarters, your vapes, home brewing supply, party, and tailgating needs headquarters, duffysbeer.com. Let's get some mail going. John is first in today. The hit on Chris Letang, guys, I thought was questionable and borderline in the offensive zone. Don't forget Malkin had a similar hit and wasn't called either, though, in the game.
Yeah,
true.
I think it questionable. It definitely is, if not a refereeing mistake. I just don't like his response to not getting the call.
Yeah, Milbury didn't like the fact that Malkin wasn't called, but he's okay with Letang getting hit. That was all right.
John says also, did Doc Emmerich mention the Marte Golden Glove? He didn't, I don't think.
He could won another award, a Wilson Defensive Player of the Year, Wilson Left Fielder of the Year.
That's an easy one. He should have had that ready to go. First glove save by Marc-Andre Fleury could have been a Golden Glove like Starling Marte.
John says he should have gotten the Boneheaded Golden Legs Award, which should have been Marte's award that he got.
I don't think they've
invented that one yet.
Thank you.
Chris emails, Chris says, Christopher Letang, is a complete mess right now.
Christopher Oliwa.
Bad penalties, he's on the ice for what seems like every 5-on-5 goal. Did I mention bad penalties? Should Markov's hit on Letang been a penalty? Maybe, but if you watch what happened afterward, Christopher is running around hitting everything. He gets on tilt when he feels like he's been wronged. He takes selfish penalties. He's a petulant child, and I'm tired of watching him let his temper get the better of him.
But his hair is fantastic.
Every time I criticize him, my wife goes, but he's so cute. She does. She loves him.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fair points there.
You think he's cute?
That chief among them. You know, you brought up Christoph Oliwa. Is that the first ever Christoph Oliwa reference here on Triple
A? I think
Radio?
It is.
I was walking. You know how you walk down the back stairs of Consol Energy Center instead of taking the elevator? I walked down to meet somebody on the FedEx level. So I walked down 3 or 4 flights, and they have all those team photos. Every time I walk down there, I get mesmerized by the great old names from some of those horse crap Pittsburgh Penguin teams that preceded the Crosby era. I mean, when you see Kent Manderville three times in a row walking down, Jani Laukkanen, John Sim, I mean, you think of the trash that came through this organization, Lassie Prieta, before the Sidney Crosby era really hit.
Those are all millionaires you're talking about, you know. Like, Kent Manderville's probably in some palace, not working again the rest of his life.
Yes.
From those 3 years of NHL
contract. Welcome
to
professional sports, as we know it.
That is amazing.
There were only three players on the team with minuses last night. Letang was one of them.
Manderville didn't have a minus?
Lassie Prieta had a dog game.
Lassie Prieta. Oh, God. Michael Vick's least favorite Penguin.
Ray Armstrong, too. Chris says, can you guys get Rossi on the line today so he can poo-poo the win last night? Every positive needs three negatives for balance. Well, we gave you one there.
Hey, the 10-2, man, that is a good stretch of hockey in any year at any time, under any circumstances, any way they're playing.
Yeah.
With some quality wins in there. That's the thing. That five-game, they righted their ship a little bit with that five-game homestand. And, you know, they couldn't have come at a better time, their longest homestand of the year. And three of the five games in that homestand, the team they beat had played the night before and traveled. So but when they went on the road and beat Nashville and Washington and now this win here, I'm starting to believe a little bit in the way they're playing. I mean, last night, as you said at the top of the show, Ken, with a couple of the now last night their string of power play goals ended. Their power play, by the way, has moved up to about 23rd, I think, in the league. Which, considering where it was, how awful it started, it shows you, five straight games with at least one power play goal.
I thought it looked okay last night. Didn't produce, but.
But Hornquist got off to Schneid, and Sid had a very good game, and it's hard to complain about anything right now, short-term or long-term. I mean, it's been 3 weeks. They've played great hockey.
Matt emails the show. He says, I heard this too, Laird. Milbury and Jonesy defending the Penguins are taking their side at those calls in the second period. They thought the refs should have let the players have some leeway and actually play. And after the game, they complimented them as well. By the way, Matt says, what is with the Penguins intermission show on Brand X? Did they hire people off the street? That's the post-Bob Grove era. Although I didn't hear that last night.
I don't know about you guys, too. The other thing about last night was, I think, the first game that I've watched from beginning to end this year that at no point, and that's what happens when you score a goal in the first minute, at no point was I sitting there thinking, man, the NHL is a bad product. I actually just sat, watched the game, enjoyed the game for itself, and at no point was thinking, this is different than what I used to watch.
I thought it was a quality game. I enjoyed the game a great deal.
Yep.
Until the intermission report came on. That's what Kent Manderville is going to do now. He's going to come out of his mansion, Ken. He's going to host the intermissions for the Penguins.
Oh, is Colby still doing intermissions? He's good. They still have Colby on?
Colby, for whatever, I don't know, it was like a 10-game contract, like a 10-game tryout, like wow. Daniel Sprong. He's contracted
to
do 10
games.
Oh, my God.
He's doing Sherwinigan intermissions now.
But I don't know if it's – I don't think it's intermission. I think he's doing post.
I heard him on intermissions one night.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, must have been a
Daniel Sprong 10-game contract. Huh?
I watch the games or I'm at the games, so I don't hear intermissions too often. On occasion, I have for the road games driving around, and let's move on.
They're going cheap and in-house. I think that pretty much sums it up.
It's developmental.
Mark B. says, might not be a signature win, but if the Penguins would have lost, Ken would have chalked it up to a moral victory. You know, I might have, Mark. Jagoffs everywhere.
It would have been a moral victory or it would have been disastrous, one or the other.
They are wearing the Iowa Hawkeye old throwback uniforms, so I think there's a connection there.
Sven
Butenschon. There's another good one. He's on that mural.
From our favorite dog, the Chihuahua. Seen it all before, guys. Frustration signs were there last night. Letang and Crosby acting like babies. But I give the Penguins some credit. They battled and came back. It was entertaining hockey and a good win. Not a signature win. Not even close. Not even close. What do you want, Chihuahua?
He wants perspective. He wants frame of reference.
I want a poem. What's this with the straight writing?
Yeah, really. Come on, killer. He does say the Mike Johnston Riot Act would have been like Hermie the Elf Dentist from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer firing up the misfit toys.
Now, there's a killer analogy, if not a killer poem, but that's a killer analogy. I like that.
It's Christmas time, too. I like that.
Or kind of like, you know, the Andy Dalton fire-up speech that went around the internet last year? Mm-hmm. We're going to go out there, and we're going to play with energy, and we're going to play together! Did you guys see that?
Or who was the Redskins? What was the Redskins'
Kirk
quarterback?
Cousins.
The Cousins.
Yeah.
What was his?
How you like that?
You like that, don't you? Mike Johnston doing, you like that?
We're going to win together. All right.
Scotty J on the Steelers. The Steelers had somebody better than Vic on the backup quarterback. You could give Landry a short leash this week, guys, but we've seen Landry is just better in throwing, and he knows the playbook. By the way, I see AB pouting this week because he doesn't get the ball enough. Let's hope any of the Cleveland Browns dog pound members don't walk into the stadium pounding their chests and barking at canines this week.
He's not going to have 23 open opportunities against Joe Hayden.
Is Joe Hayden going to play?
That's true. If he doesn't play, then maybe he will. But I thought he was. Wasn't he limited yesterday?
I don't think he played last week. And yeah, I think he was limited. They had Tremont Williams and
they are banged up. What's the name of the guard? Not Bonino. Betonio. He's out for the game. That's a big loss. And I know, obviously, McCown's got the rib problem. They've got injuries all up and down.
More from Daryl Ryder from Cleveland, Browns
reporter.
I think
Joe Thomas was limited yesterday in practice, too.
I want to get this in before the top of the hour as well. Oh, do you want to go the Jim Benedict, or do you want to get into the concussion stuff? What should we get here?
Oh, I mean, it was just a brief reference to the concussion stuff that I wanted to bring up because Mike Freeman sent that tweet out. Somebody asked Freeman on Twitter, hey, I heard that this concussion movie makes the city of Pittsburgh and the Steelers look bad. And the response from Freeman is, let's just say both will not be happy with it, or words to that effect. And that was it. So I don't know. I guess this is very... I expected there to be an anti-Steeler undertone to it because...
That's where the setting is.
Yeah. And Webster and everything else. But I don't know about the city of Pittsburgh. How is the city of Pittsburgh going to be made to look bad in this?
Mike Freeman wrote a big piece for Bleacher Report this morning. I'll read you a little part of it. He says, there's a scene in the movie Concussion, which I saw Wednesday at a sneak preview in Manhattan, where Dave Duerson, the former Chicago Bears defensive back, and former Philadelphia Eagles D-back Andre Waters get into a heated exchange outside the NFL's offices in Manhattan. The scene, quite frankly, brought tears to my eyes. I know both men. They were players who thrived on physicality, especially Waters. He was the hardest-hitting player I ever saw, and yes, the dirtiest. But he goes into the scene, and the headline is, Concussion Movie Will Be Heartbreaking, Enlightening, and Disturbing for NFL Fans. So I don't know. I mean, it's scheduled for release on Christmas Day. That seems like a weird time to go out. Yeah, I mean, yeah, this would be better like now, I feel like. I don't know why it's Christmas Day release. But Ben Anamalu, of course, is the Pittsburgh pathologist who discovered CTE or, you know, at least came to chronicle it.
Mike Webster's involved in this. If I were releasing a movie, I would release everything before December 18th, before Star Wars. Because people just keep going to see Star Wars over.
Well, that's
again.
True. It's going to get buried by it. There's a lot of good films coming out. The new Tarantino is Christmas Day release. I mean, I don't think that's an uplifting holiday movie people were going to want to go to see. This is more.
Well, I can't imagine the Tarantino movie is going to be an uplifting holiday movie either.
Yeah, but that is though.
I mean, Django Unchained was a real Christmas masterpiece.
People like seeing people getting whacked in fantasy world, not in the football world, not in.
Yeah, that's kind of heavy for that time of the year. I agree with you.
That's real heavy.
The Catholic Priest movie is at least coming out before Christmas. That was a nice touch. Give a little space there.
But anyway, it says the NFL is portrayed as a tobacco-style corporation that puts profit over lives. League executives are portrayed as shadowy and devious, almost comically so, but it's an accurate portrayal. And he goes into a lot of the...
Oh, how could it be comically so? I mean, Goodell is a comedy parody of himself. I don't think you can make that cartoonish. Honestly, I don't. I think that you couldn't go too far with Roger Goodell. I have got the impression, too, as well, Ken, like the way that was just phrased there. It kind of feels like that movie, The Insider, except for concussions instead of tobacco. The Russell Crowe movie.
Well, I wonder if it's going to less affect the NFL and just parents and their kids and concern for it. Like the science, when the science and the knowledge of this stuff becomes mainstream and everybody knows it's fact and believes it's fact, then are you letting your kids play football or less so to an even more extreme?
Oh, for God's sakes, what are they going to play, soccer? You know, after how many years of ESPN guilting me and shaming me into thinking that I should like soccer more, they've done that for a decade and a half, and then within the past 48 hours, they've told me that soccer's going to give me concussions, Lou Gehrig's disease, and cancer.
don't eat hot dogs either.
On outside the line in E60. You know, honestly, they did that thing about the tire pellets getting into your scabs, and you're swallowing them and getting in your eyes, and then you're going to get cancer. And then they said yesterday that you can't have headers until you're 10 years old, or else you're going to get a concussion, and then you're going to get Lou Gehrig's disease.
That's makes all... throwing a curveball before you're 10 seem kind of mild.
Jesus.
Like, there are Mike Ditka, for example. How many headshots do you think Mike took in his career? He is still on TV.
Well, it's his flatulence that's a bigger concern.
Oh, well, hey. That clip is still in debate, isn't it? Maybe not. That one was less in debate than the Tom Sula.
That one they kind of went with.
Okay.
They parried it the next week anyway.
Well, but Kenny, there are a lot of guys who played a long time and survived and had no issues. That doesn't mean it's not a concern.
I think there's what did Gateway have go out for high school football 2 years ago? 49 kids? They used to have 70? I'm not talking about population shrinkage. I mean, you've already seen a decline in kids playing football. I mean, you know, I know I'm older, but I'm not 1,000 years old. When I was in high school, you played football in the fall, you played basketball in the winter, baseball or track in the spring. And that was pretty much it. We had tennis and golf maybe, but we didn't have soccer. We didn't have lacrosse. Hockey came in when I was there. You know, there's so many choices, first of all, now just even if there wasn't a concussion, there's just a lot more choices out there. And I once again, no statistics to back it up. I'm at a high school football game every Friday night for 13 weeks, and I'm usually, if not the best game, one of the best games that week. And I've noticed a decline in attendance. There seems like there's a lot less seats filled. I feel like there's a lot more only parents there watching. And, you know, I think there's been we've in this area, in a very proud, historic high school football area, have seen a decline already.
Football more threatened than soccer and hockey, right? But all three being threatened in some form.
Yes, sure, especially soccer now. I mean, I'm not kidding when I say that. I mean, it went almost instantly the minute the World Cup ended, and maybe this isn't coincidence. You know, they didn't have the Women's World Cup to shove down our throats. Okay, we don't have any soccer for a while. Okay, it gives you cancer.
But that's only in the U.S., right?
Well, you could cure that. That's not the game. That's what we're playing on. You could cure that in a hurry by playing on real grass. If the cows don't eat it, don't play on it.
See, Heinz Field was ahead of the curve. Or get that GD Grassmaster in.
Hayden and Whitner. Whitner was the name I was blanking on for the
If the Northeastern Browns. Cheerleaders don't eat it, don't play on it.
Come on. That is a low blow. Don't make me dip into the Sandusky bag of bad jokes, okay?
Hayden and Whitner with concussions. That Whitner was the other name I couldn't remember because I've had a few myself. So that's the other one. And Thomas was just a rest day, I guess.
Well, I never played soccer. I don't know this, but if you can't header a ball until you're 13, developmentally, how far does that put you behind the rest of the world?
No kidding. How are we going to catch the Germans then?
I mean, I'm serious.
So am I.
Okay.
Those Brazilians, they don't care if they have any concussions. What do they care?
You know, we were playing at halftime. It was electronic media against print media at halftime of a Spirit game at the Civic Arena one time. And we were going to, you know, I was looking forward to playing. And, you know, so we go out to play, and instead of a regular soccer ball, they give us this giant orb. It had to be, for you guys here in the room, from the desk to the ceiling, about that big.
Oh, my
and
God.
And it was made out of canvas, and it was inflated. So Bruce,
like a fat guy suit?
Canvas. It felt like an awning, that kind of material. I don't know what the hell it was or where they go. But I'm like, what is this? This is a carnival. So we're out there running around trying to kick the thing. I'm 5'10". It was as tall as I was. I mean, the ball was as tall as I was running around. It was stupid. But somebody managed to get it up in the air, and it's coming to me, and I'm clowning around, and I go to head it. And I got a great laugh out of the 7,000 people in the stands when I heard a crack in my neck.
Ooh.
And I've thought about that a million times, how close I may have come to breaking my neck heading that stupid, ginormous canvas ball that they threw out that
night.
And
if that had happened, soccer would have been banned in America.
It would have been.
The guy junker rule.
It would have been the end of the MISL, as we know it.
You could have owned that league.
Would have been Stan Pomp loved the show. That would have been awkward.
It was Guy Pomp for a year.
Was that right?
The first year of the show was me and Pompiani, yeah.
We're brought to you by Duffy's
Beer. Luckily, Stan got fired by Channel 4 and became available.
One's misfortune. See, Vic pulls a hammy. Landry Jones rises up.
Guy Landry loved the show.
Every profession, same old story.
Guy Landry loved the parts.
Yeah, that's right, because you had your part back in the day. So you know what? You could have read all the sports scores, and Landry could have read the Book of Psalms. It would have been nice.
Are we going to take it pleasant on media friends of Trib Live Radio, Daryl Ryder, next? Are we going to grill him about the Browns and their ineptitude? Actually, Daryl loves ripping the Browns. That's one of the great things about having
him on. How could you not? Like, I would imagine covering the Browns right now is akin to what covering the Pirates was for 20 years.
Oh, yeah. It's true, too. And he's every time I see him, he's always so frustrated in the press box. He's like,
although, I think the worst thing to cover is a 500 team. At least there are stories and entertainment value in chronic ineptitude.
Well, they were 7-9 last year, though. So it got pretty mediocre. They're bad again. See if they can beat Landry and the Steelers. We'll get some insight from Daryl Ryder from 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland. That's coming up next. All brought to you by Duffy's Beer. Commercial-free in the 10 a.m. hour and limited commercials throughout the program. Tim Benz, Ken Laird, and the hashtag Legend Guy Junker.